Hello, and welcome to Patrick Holford's Food is Medicine podcast on food allergies. To help identify if allergies are an issue for you, we have teamed up with York Test to bring you some great deals with savings of up to £148. To take advantage of these special offers, just go to www.patrickholford.com/YorkTest for details.
My name is Patrick Holford, and as a nutritional therapist, I get asked so many times about the subject of allergy, specifically food allergies. So many people experience problems, digestive problems, aching joints, asthma, eczema. The incidence of food-related intolerances is really going up. So I am delighted today to be joined by Dr. Jill Hart, who is a clinical biochemist with over 20 years' experience in the development of laboratory tests. And Jill is also an expert in food intolerance and has been the scientific director of York Test Laboratories, Europe's leading food intolerance testing laboratory, for the past 7 years. So, welcome, Jill.
Welcome, Patrick.
What got you started in the field of food allergy and food intolerance research?
Well, York Test has been going for 30 years this year. York Test started really with the research that was being carried out in the 1980s, which was really showing promise for the fact that an IgG antibody might be useful in determining the foods that people should eliminate from their diet if they were suffering from food intolerance.
Now, just before you go on, I want to understand this business of IgG, because the basis for an allergy, as I understand it, is that the body produces antibodies that specifically target and attack the thing that you are reacting to. And certainly in the early days of allergy, there was the conception of that allergies are very immediate, very strong, and the research seemed to indicate that they involved an antibody called IgE. In those days, we spoke about, as nutritionists, delayed onset allergies, hidden food allergies. So what is IgG, and can you explain the difference? There's a lot of confusion
around
this. Yes,
of course, there is a lot of confusion in the media, and it's very, very difficult for people to tease out what is actually IgE allergy and what is food intolerance, as you like. You very clearly explained that IgE-based antibody allergy, classical allergy reactions, are very immediate, they're very quick. People usually know when they have one because they're reacting to something like a peanut or a tree nut or shellfish. Now, allergies, people with allergies constitute 1 or 2% of the adult population, whereas food intolerance, the official statistics from Allergy UK, are that they constitute about 45% of the population. So allergy, the sort of allergy you're talking about, is actually a very, very tiny part of what is a much bigger picture. Now, within that bigger picture, there are people suffering from food intolerance, which you rightly describe as being delayed onset rather than an immediate reaction. It's taking several hours or maybe even several days to actually come out and for people to have the symptoms of food intolerance. Within that large group of 40, 42, 43% of the population, there are people suffering from celiac disease, which is about 1% of the population, lactose intolerance. But these well-defined groups are a very, very small part of that large 45% group. If you look at the rest of the group, they are very ill-defined. They can't be categorised medically. And so people within that group look for help. And what we've found is that an antibody type IgG is useful in actually targeting an elimination diet from them. If they want to start an elimination diet, they think that food is causing their problems and they don't know where to start. This actual IgG antibody test shows when they have actually reacted to foods.
So can you explain what's involved in an IgG antibody test?
The IgG antibody test is very simple. It's a simple blood finger prick test that you can do yourself at home. You are sent a blood collection kit with a lancet. You prick your finger, collect the blood, and send that blood back to our laboratory at York Test, where it is analysed by a method which is quite a complicated name. It's an enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay, an ELISA test. Now, ELISA tests are used worldwide. They're very widely used in hospitals, and they have very good reproducibility. And York Test developed an ELISA test for IgG antibodies to foods probably more than 15 years ago. And once we receive your blood, we actually analyse your blood using the ELISA test that we manufacture ourselves at York Test and provide the results back to you in a really easy to understand format, which shows the scale really of reactivity that you've got to each of individual foods. And the number of foods tested is up to about 158, I think, is the maximum number of foods we test now.
Yes, I have one in front of me here, and I can see that you can have a plus 4 reaction, a plus 3, I've got one of those, a plus 2, and then there's a sort of plus 1, and there's a sort of hint of a reaction. So
that's right.
This is the amount of IgG that is produced in relation to the food. I mean, how does that actually work, you know, in the lab? How do you test whether a person is reacting against a food from their blood sample?
What we actually do is we manufacture something called an ELISA plate. Now, an ELISA plate consists of 96 little dishes, if you like, very small dishes, and each of those is actually coated with a food stuff. There may be more than one ELISA plate used in the test. As we coat the food onto the ELISA plate, the manufacturing of this plate is really, really critical. If you actually coat on too much food, you can get false positive results. If you coat on too much little food, you can get false negative results. And the manufacturing process takes about 2 days. Once we've created this ELISA plate, we add your blood sample to the diluted blood sample to each of the wells, and any antibodies in the wells will bind to the specific foods. For example, one of the wells will contain wheat, a very highly purified medical grade wheat preparation, and your blood will be bound, will be added to that, and any antibodies in your blood will actually bind up to that wheat. Then we actually add another reagent on top of that, which actually binds to any human elements in the well. And we add a reaction which turns colour from a clear colour to a yellow colour. Now, when you're talking about the scaling system of 4-3-2-1, we have a York Test calibration system that we set up in the 1990s in order to calibrate the reaction. And we are comparing the results from your blood to our standard calibrators. Now, the degree of yellow colour is transcribed into the classification scoring that you talk about. And so if you have no yellow colour at all, you've got a zero reaction right up to the maximum, which is a plus 4 reaction, which, as you say, you've got a plus 3. I have a plus 3 as well with milk. And we can actually then calibrate very, very carefully each of the foodstuffs that we measure.
So this is a really empirical thing. It's actually measuring exactly what your immune system or how your immune system is reacting to foods. And I presume that if it's doing it in the dish, it's doing it, you know, in
exactly.
your body as well.
Exactly. I mean, the levels of IgG antibodies that we produce are quite high levels. So the sample that you collect has got enough IgG on there for us to measure to start with. The sample's very, very stable. So we've looked at stability studies which show the sample can be transported. So when we actually receive your sample, we have an exact snapshot. It's a sample of how your immune system, your IgG antibody reactions are on the particular moment that you took your sample. And this gives a reflection of your immune system, your IgG part of your immune system on that particular time.
Now, one of the big questions I often get asked is, how reliable is it? I mean, for a start, does one's IgG reactivity change day by day? If you send in a sample on Monday, a sample on Tuesday, will you get the same result? So that's one thing I'd love to ask you. But also, I've had myself tested by other laboratories claiming also to do IgG testing, and sometimes the results are different. So I'd love to understand
a bit more about that. It's a very good question, Patrick, because certainly when you're talking about different laboratories giving different results, I talked about the standardisation system, the calibration system that York Test set up years ago. Well, the actual measurement of IgG antibodies isn't standardised worldwide. There are a lot of tests that you would carry out, you would have done at a hospital, for example, if you had your thyroid function checked out. There is an international standard for measuring thyroxine, and every laboratory in the whole world would measure it in the same way. We do not have the luxury of that with measuring IgG antibodies, so we don't have a standard for measuring, say, the IgG antibody to wheat. Therefore, it's really important that any test that is manufactured and produced goes on to show that the test is effective. And the only way to do that is to actually carry out clinical trials and to evaluate the test itself. There are many IgG tests on the market. I can't comment on them in detail, but you're right in saying that they do give different results. And I think, in terms of somebody going to go along and actually try out or think about trying out an IgG test, they should feel confident in asking the supplier of that test, have you got clinical data to show your test works? Because they should know that each test is giving slightly different results, but some majorly different results. The only way you're not going to know if that test works is if you have got clinical trial data. We're very proud at York Test of the clinical trials that we've carried out. Our published data is out there for scrutiny, for people to see. We are very open and honest about how our test performs, and very proud of the way our test performs.
So the other question there is, do your IgG antibody levels change day by day? So if I was to send in a sample today and a sample tomorrow, or even split sample, am I going to get the same results?
The test that we offer has been validated clinically, and we have to, and technically, we have to meet certain requirements of the European in vitro diagnostics directives and medical device directives, and we actually look at reproducibility as part of that, and it's very important. And typical of ELISA tests, we see, as you would normally see with an ELISA test, typically a 98% reproducibility, which means that in practice, if you send in a sample one day and another sample the next day, you would expect to see at least 98% of the results being the same day to day, which is typical, as I say, of ELISA test performance.
Now, you mentioned the importance of clinical trials to actually establish if these results translate into actual health improvements. Could you say a little bit about the clinical trials that you've been involved in?
There are a number now. If you go back and actually look at the amount of research and the different types of research that have been done into the effectiveness of an elimination diet based on IgG, you will find that out of three randomised controlled trials, there are only three, two of them were involving the York test, and those were involving IBS and migraine, and both of those showed significant differences, significant improvement when people actually removed the foods from the diet that were identified by the York test. But York tests were also involved in the largest study of its kind, which was using over 5,000 people. It was a study that was commissioned by Allergy UK and analysed and interpreted by the University of York. And that showed, with over 5,000 people, that more than 3 out of 4 people showed significant improvement to their ill health symptoms. And those symptoms were really wide-ranging, from the typical symptoms that you associate with food intolerance, such as IBS, bloating, gut problems, diarrhoea and constipation, right through to low mood, to fatigue, lethargy, migraines and headaches, joint pains, and skin problems as well, of course, and respiratory problems. It was very interesting, that study, actually, because out of the people that had rigorously adhered to the diet and had a really good improvement, if they introduced the foods back into their diet after 3 months that had been identified by the test, 92% of those people got their symptoms back, which to me is proof that this is an absolutely active treatment.
Yes, so what you're saying is that there are a lot of people out there with eczema, skin problems, asthma, digestive problems, aching joints, migraine, sort of chronic fatigue, mood problems, and so on. And what might be part of that is that they have an unidentified food intolerance. And if they identify what that is through proper testing and eliminate it, that 3 in 4 get significant improvement.
That's right. It's an anecdotal study. It's what people have told us. Mm-hmm. But it absolutely ties in what we have seen by offering the service for many, many years and helping many, many thousands of people to feel better.
I remember reading the study on irritable bowel syndrome, IBS. I thought it was really interesting because this is a terribly hard area to do good research in. And if I remember rightly, I think there were 150 IBS sufferers. Yeah. And they were all tested using the York test food intolerance. And then their doctors were given real or fake results.
That's
so
right,
the doctor
yes.
didn't know.
Yeah.
And then advised the patient to avoid their supposed food allergens. And so this is kind of like a double-blind control trial.
It was, yes.
And those who were avoiding their real food intolerances got better significantly. And those that were on the fake tests didn't.
That's right, exactly, exactly. And also the ones that were on the fake tests, they didn't get better, but the actual scale of the improvement of those that were on the true test were really quite remarkable and certainly gave a very significant result in statistical analysis.
I mean, it really worries me because wherever I travel these days, so many people are given these PPI drugs, proton pump inhibitors, that stop you making stomach acid without any conversation about food. And it seems pretty obvious to really anyone half intelligent that if you're feeling bad after eating, it might be something you're eating. But it's amazing how little that gets discussed. Now, how long do these IgG antibody sensitivities really last? So the question here is, when you get that result with a +4 and a +3 and a +2 and a +1, which sometimes can be quite overwhelming if you've got a lot of foods that you're reacting to, what do you actually do? And does it mean that you have to avoid these foods forever?
Well, the first thing is I agree that when you actually receive your results, particularly if you've got a number of foods to remove, the actual the task of removing them can feel absolutely overwhelming. And I think the important part of the service that York Test offers is the fact that we give access to nutritional therapist support as part of that service. And I think it's very important that people aren't left on their own to actually manage on their own. They do need support. The question about, you know, how long do you need to remove the foods for? Well, whereas allergies are typically for life, certainly adult allergies, food intolerance based on IgG reactions certainly doesn't have to be for life. And it really is down to your individual makeup. The IgG antibody lasts in the blood system. It has a half-life of about 6 weeks. So if you remove the food that's triggering that IgG antibody from your diet, then it will no longer be produced. And after 6 weeks, you will drop down by half again after 12 weeks. And so by 3 to 6 to 9 months, you will no longer have that antibody necessarily in your bloodstream. Now, what the real issue here is, have you got time? Has it given your body time to heal? And when we're talking about your body, you're talking specifically about your gut. Your gut, as you know, houses 70% of your immune system, and it's really important in this aspect. And what we find with the triggers for IgG antibodies are the fact that foods are unable to be processed properly in the gut, and rather than small, well-digested proteins and nutrients being passed through into the bloodstream, you get larger particles which can stimulate IgG antibody production. The healing of that gut is really, really important. So by actually removing your trigger, you can heal the gut, maybe support that healing with supplements, digestive enzymes, probiotics, making sure you're eating, you know, antioxidant-based foods, looking after yourself, reducing stress. With all that together, which is where your nutritional therapist comes in, then you can actually start to heal your gut. And if you eliminate the food as well to prevent further inflammation, you can look at trying to reintroduce foods after 3 to 6 months. Now, some people cannot introduce those foods back because they, the symptoms return. Other people are able to reduce the symptoms down and then reintroduce the foods back after that time. It really is dependent on the individual, but there is hope. That's the main message. So there is hope.
It's not a life.
It's not a lifetime problem, and it is.
And if you retest, and you have been avoiding the food, are you still wasting your time because you just find no reactivity, or should you start to eat some of the foods that might have been a problem before you retest? So, I mean, do you recommend retesting? And if so, how and when?
I do recommend retesting because I think with any substantial dietary change, A, you can see, you know, how effective that is by seeing if the reactivity that you've had before is reducing. And it may or may not disappear down to nothing. Your memory cells that produce IgG antibodies can be active for many, many years, and any even tiny trigger can keep that going. So I think it's important for you to still have a snapshot of where you are. If you've substantially changed your diet as well, you may be introducing different foods that can become a problem. Certainly I'd recommend retesting after a year, maybe 9 months, but certainly a year, to then give you another baseline to which to keep on top of your intolerances and keep your optimum levels of intake of, you know, foods and balance them out. Because what we don't want to happen is for you to, you know, to think, oh, well, I've removed them for 6 to 9 months, I'll start eating them again. Your symptoms may not come back straight away, but you've still got that potential there.
And is there a need to bring those foods back in before you do the test, or not really, because the antibodies are there anyway, or not?
I don't think that it makes much difference. Some people choose to start eating those foods again up to 6 weeks before taking the test. My own view is that, you know, don't eat anything that you think is going to cause you a problem. And certainly if you eat it and you're causing a problem, you know it's causing you a problem. So there's actually no point in carrying on suffering for 6 weeks just to see whether you've got an antibody reaction there. Just, I think if the antibodies are there, they are going to be there, you know, 6 weeks later, because they won't have dropped off anyway. And so I wouldn't necessarily encourage people to start eating foods necessarily to see if it comes up on the test. I think if they're there, they're going to still be there.
Now, a lot of people say that food allergies and or intolerances are on the increase. Do you think that's true? And if so, why? What is driving this increase in problems?
I think the data, the research data certainly shows allergies on the increase. It's certainly with intolerances. I don't know what your view is on intolerances, but I certainly can
Well, my
see.
Gut feeling is yes, yeah. But it's hard to know if people are just more aware. Certainly we see increases in things like asthma as, you know, very, very apparent. But, of course, not everyone agrees that that's necessarily associated with allergy.
No. So if you actually look back at the sorts of things that can be impacting, I think you need to go back to your gut, gut reaction. But you need to go back to your gut and look at things that can cause your gut stress, because that's where, you know, you suddenly aren't processing your foods as well. And if you look at those factors, if you think about the foods you eat, the processed foods you eat now compared with what we used to eat, you know, in the Stone Age, certainly the additives that are added to foods that are not really natural, you're not eating natural products, the pollutants in the air, the way that animals are over-farmed, over-intensively farmed. Certainly looking at stress levels will have a big impact on your gut performance, and medication that you might be taking. Alcohol, people using alcohol routinely can increase gut permeability, can increase problems of food intolerance. So there are many, many different factors actually that can be influencing the way that we're processing our food. And it only takes a small amount of poorly processed food in your body to actually trigger this sort of reaction. And once it's there, you get into a vicious circle, unfortunately, and you need to start standing back, thinking about what you can do, taking a test, finding out what foods are involved, and then try and break that vicious circle. But it does take time.
Now, I've seen more and more research come out, most of which is very favourable for a link between IgG and clinical symptoms. But there seems to still be so much medical resistance. I mean, is this valid or is it just ignorance? I mean, what's going on?
That's a really interesting question. I think you need to start by looking at the fact that if you have a food intolerance, you need help in carrying out a targeted elimination diet. And in order to actually get that help, you need probably a test and probably nutritional therapist support. And putting that aside, if you have food intolerance, you have some really horrible symptoms. They're very real to you. You have IBS, you're suffering, people are having to take time off work. And the natural instinct for you is to go to your doctor. You go to your doctor, and your doctor is very well qualified in looking after you, your severe symptoms, or if there's anything really seriously wrong with you. But your doctor isn't well qualified in actually managing your diet for you in terms of the nutritionist support, the therapist support that you would need. So there is a massive disconnect, actually. And because the NHS isn't designed to help you managing dietary changes for what are considered sometimes minor, but they're not minor really to people, symptoms, then there is this disconnect. And I think people need, I think it's important that people are aware that there are options for them. They probably aren't options that they're going to receive under the NHS, but they are going to be options they might have to pay for, and they might have to look elsewhere. But there are options there for them in actually trying to understand exactly what foods can be the problem and then have the management of the dietary changes. But they aren't going to get those from their doctor. And I think probably there's a huge frustration. There's probably a frustration in the medical profession that they can't help people more. And there's a frustration for the patient who wants some help but is probably being given medication and, doesn't really know what to do next.
And if a doctor wants to find out more, wants to look at that science, wants to, gen up on food intolerances, where can they go? What can they read?
If people want to find out more information, they can go to our website. There's a lot of information there, all the research papers. There's a lot of information on different symptoms and lots of statistics, actually, that some of them published, some of them not yet published, that they can have a look at. And, of course, if anybody has any questions, they can always email me via the website and I can help where possible.
And that website is www.yorktest.com. So, Dr. Jill Hart, thank you very much. That really has explained so much to me about food intolerances, allergies, and the state of the art and the science. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick.
To take advantage of these special offers, just go to www.patrickholford.com/yorktest for details. To find out more about health and nutrition, please visit us at patrickholford.com. As well as access to a library of update information, you can join our online club, be supported with our online programme, find out more about our regular events and purchase books and products to help you become and stay healthy. If you have any feedback on the show, please email us at podcast@patrickholford.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Search for Patrick Holford. Thank you for listening to our Food is Medicine podcast.